Okay. I have it, right? Yeah. Week one. Okay. That's what it should say at the top. All right. So, we are in Perek Chavav, chapter 26. Just a bit of a recap because I wasn't able to give the shiur last week. 25, of course, Perek Chav Hey, was Abigail, Naval, David. At the end, we had David's marriages that he has to Ahinoam, as well as Abigail, and Palti ben Laish taking in Michal. We talked about what that was all about, not revisiting that right now. And then in Perek Chavav, chapter 26, we get what seems at first to be a rerun from chapter 24. It began with Shaul pursuing David in a place called Kibat HaChachila. This is back in the Hebron area where David had been originally before he went south to Paran. Shaul is pursuing David there because the Ziphites, the people of Ziph, told him that David was in the area. They betrayed David. He comes after David once again with 3,000 warriors. This time it says they're choice warriors, which we discussed a little bit. And David decides, I am going to invade Shaul's military camp. Susan noted that this is reminiscent of Yonatan attacking the Philistine outpost. I'm just going to take the initiative and I'm going. And David goes himself along with Abishai. Right? He asked Abishai. Abishai is the brother of Yoav, who will be David's general, although right now we haven't met Yoav. He asked Ahimelech as well. Ahimelech didn't go, but Abishai agrees to go with David to come invade Shaul's military circle. And that's what we're up to. Right? This all sounds familiar? Somewhat? Okay. So, a key difference between the story in chapter, yeah, let's read through those three psukim, those three last psukim, and then I'll go into the differences. So take a look at chapter 26, sentence 4. Vayishlach David meraglim vayeda kiva Shaul el Nachon. David sends spies who see that Shaul has arrived. And as I said last time, I'm not discussing the term el Nachon, whether that's a place or whether it means he had arrived completely, fully, whatever. Vayakam David, vayavo al hamakom asher chana sham Shaul. David went to the place where Shaul was camped. Vayar David es hamakom asher shachav sham Shaul. David saw the place where Shaul was lying. He sees it from afar. Ve'avner ben Ner sartzavao, and he sees Avner, Shaul's general. He's been the general since, you know, at least chapter 16, 16, 17. V'Shaul shochev b'ma'agal. And Shaul is lying inside the camp, but everybody is camped around him to shield him. Shaul is not one to stay in the palace. He's on the hunt. And David declared to Ahimelech Hachiti and to Abishai ben Tsuya, the brother of Yoav, saying, "Mi yered iti el Shaul el hamachaneh? Who's coming with me, with Shaul, to the camp?" Vayomer Abishai, ani ered imach. And Abishai says, I will go with you. So the first key difference between chapter 24 and chapter 26 is that David takes the initiative to go to Shaul. The meeting in chapter 24 was accidental. David and his men are hiding in a cave. Shaul is planning to go find David in the boulders and rocks where the mountain goats are. Shaul takes a pit stop in the cave, and David happens to be in the cave. But it's an accident. So that's one key difference between the stories, and we'll see more differences. But I want to note something that I sort of started with last time, and now I want to enlarge it, which is the introduction of Abishai. I said last time, Abishai is David's nephew. Right? He is the son of a woman named Tsruya, who is David's sister. We asked why we are naming him by his mother, and we brought from Professor Keel in the Da'at Mikra that it's maybe because their mother is David's sister, so that association is important. Maybe it's because she was particularly righteous. Maybe it's because her husband passed away early and she raised the kids herself. We also identified Avishai as the brother of Yoav, which we found weird because we haven't met Yoav yet, as I noted, but the Navi is trying to orient the reader, because you will get to know Yoav. Yoav is going to have a much larger role, ultimately, than Avishai. So it's valuable for that reason to say brother of Yoav. However, David did not ask Yoav to go on the mission, and I suggested Avishai might actually be older. The problem is the brothers are listed in Shmuel Beis, chapter 2, Perek Beis, and there the order of the brothers is Yoav, Avishai, and then their third brother, Asael. But in Divrei Hayamim, it's Avishai, Yoav, and then Asael. Maybe Avishai is actually older, and that's why David goes to him, and that's why Yoav isn't the general yet at this point. In any case, that's actually a little bit of a side thing. The thing that I wanted to focus on is Avishai himself. The introduction of Avishai may be the most enduring piece of this perek, in the sense that the brothers Tzruya, as I like to call them, the three of them, Avishai, Yoav, Asael, are the backbone of the reign of David HaMelech, of King David. Yoav is the general who leads David's men. And here I show you a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Take a look at source number one, please, on your sheet. It's building off of a pasuk in Shmuel Beis Perek Ches. Shmuel Beis Perek Ches is a chapter that describes David's victories, David's military victories. So look at this Gemara. Ilmale David lo asa Yoav milchama. If not for David, Yoav couldn't have waged war. The Ilmale Yoav lo asak David batorah. And if not for Yoav, David couldn't have learned Torah. What do you mean? This pasuk. David practiced justice and tzedakah for his entire nation. V'yoav ben Tzruya al hatzava, and Yoav son of Tzruya was over the army. Matam David asa mishpatut tzedakah l'chol amo. Why is David able to do this? Mishum v'yoav al hatzava, because Yoav is over the army. Umatam Yoav al hatzava, and why is Yoav over the army? Mishum to David asa mishpatut tzedakah l'chol amo, because David is carrying out mishpat and tzedakah for his entire nation. So Yoav is viewed as crucial for David, and that's a theme which you're going to see throughout Shmuel Beis and into Malachim. Avishai is at Yoav's side in the service of David, and you see it here clearly with the invasion of the camp of Shaul. You're going to see it later on in Shmuel Beis. In, I think it's in Perikles, actually, when they fight off a double attack from Aram coming from the north and Ammon coming from the south. They're going to fight off this attack, Avishai facing one direction, Yoav facing the other direction, back to back. Like, that's the image. He's going to defend, along with Yoav, he's going to defend David from Avshalom's rebellion. He's going to crush the revolt of Sheva ben Bichri, and more. Avishai is a constant with David. The third brother, Asael, is going to be killed by Avner in the initial battle between Avner and Yoav after Shaul is dead. That's its own story. These men, though, are David's warriors, and they are extremely dangerous people. Avishai and Yoav will partner in the murder of Avner after Avner has surrendered to David. Yoav is going to execute Avshalom, the rebellious son of David, against orders. Yoav is going to kill Amasa, the general of Avshalom, again violating a surrender. So it's not for nothing that when you get to Shmuel Beis chapter 3, we find David saying that the sons of Tzruya are too tough for him. They're family. They're his nephews. They're a dangerous bunch. A righteous bunch in certain ways, but very, very dangerous. So just keep this in mind as we go forward, because you've just been introduced to Avishai. Yes, Susan.
After killing Goliath, it just sounds strange to me that David would be worried about anybody else.
Yep, indeed. And when we get, God willing, one day, to Shmuel Beis chapter 3, ETA November 2023. We will have to talk about that. I'm kidding. We're not going to get there in November 2023. We got a long way after. That'll be 2024. But we will have to talk about that, about what David says to about the brothers Tzruya being too tough for him. That line is a very difficult line. You are correct. Okay. So let's see where things go in our story. Other questions and comments before we go further? Okay, then let's go. Chapter 26, sentence 7. Pasuk Zayin. Vayavo David va'Abishai el ha'am laila. So David and Abishai, who we've just, been talking about, they come to the camp at night. V'hine Shaul shochev yashen b'ma'agal. Shaul is sleeping in this circle. And his spear is jammed into the ground at his head. The word Mira'ashosav may be familiar. I see Chana looks up when she hears it. Janine also. When Yaakov is running away from home, right? And he goes to sleep and he takes the stone and he puts it, he takes stones and he puts them Mira'ashosav, right? And so there are two explanations there as to what he did. Either he used the stones as a pillow, or he used the stones as a wall around his head. The first is the Gemara's answer, the second is the Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah. Here, presumably, the spear is adjacent to his head. It's not under his head physically, especially because of where the story is going. But he has his spear, his trusty spear, because Shaul never goes anywhere without the spear. I put it on your sheet a little bit later, if you look at source number 6, references to the chanit of Shaul. We've seen them repeatedly. Shaul is never without the spear. So, ve'avner beham shochvim sivosav, and Avner the general, along with the army, are all camped around him. Right, 3,000 men. It's a serious camp. Vayomar Avishai el David. Avishai says to David, Sigar Elokim hayom es oyivcha biyadecha. God has put your enemy into your hands today. Ve'ata akenu na bachanis uva'aretz pam achas. He says, let me run him through with the spear into the ground all at once. Reminiscent of Shaul, right, when he also stabbing through, right, with the spear all at once. We've seen that that image. Velo eshnet, and I'm not going to have to do it a second time. Meaning, don't worry, it'll be clean, it'll be quick, it'll be forceful, and that's that. Velo eshnelo, I'm not going to have to do it a second time. So he's offering to execute Shaul on behalf of David. Now, pause the story here. Why would he think that David will go for this? Doesn't he remember chapter 24 when they were hiding in the cave and David said, no, we don't hurt Shaul, and he cut the corner of the cloak and he was angry that he even did that? I understand the point that we made way back, like chapter 22, that Shaul changed the rules when he massacred Nov. Right? He set up the idea that bloodshed is okay in the pursuit of power. And Shaul set a precedent for that kind of, and as a consequence of that, that's why David is being betrayed by Keilah and by Ziph and all of that. But chapter 24, David explicitly said, I am not willing to do it. So how do you understand this?
Could it be that he thought David had changed his mind, because why is he going at night? And it's like if you're going in friendship, you don't usually go at night with that kind of captain. So mm-hmm. He may have thought, well, maybe he's had enough and he wants to now get on with ruling or whatever.
So I definitely hear it. I especially hear it because of chapter 25. When David went on the warpath against Nabal until Abigail calmed him down. So maybe as a function of that, he thinks, maybe David's changing his tactics. Janine?
Well, at this point, Shaul has promised he's changing his ways, and he broke his promise. And he's really become
to harm him because it's self-preservation.
Well, he was also a Rodef in chapter 24. There was a reason he had 3,000 warriors.
Did he swear before that or after that?
Oh, multiple times. He swore to Yonasan, I would never do it, right?
But
you could argue it's been more egregious now. You could make the argument. Chana?
After what you said, that now he offers to go, and why is he going? What does he want to achieve? So maybe he thinks, now he really wants to do something.
Right. Like what Susan was saying also. Could be. The Malbim picks up on something else. He picks up on the God language. Right? Abishai said, Sigar Elokim Hayom Etzal Yivcha Biyadecha, God has given your enemy into your hands. Which we saw back in chapter 24 also. Chapter 24, sentence 4, David's men said, it's from God. But Malbim says, take a look at source number 2. Chashav Sheze Vadai Hashgachi. He thought it has to be divine supervision. Sheyishnu Kulam. That all of them are sleeping. Kadeshi Akeus, that he could strike, meaning to strike Shaul. He says, this has to be an opportunity from God. David, you gotta do it. I don't care if you don't want to do it. This is it. That's Malbim's take. Nonetheless, David says no. Pasuk Tes. Sentence 9. Vayomer David el Abishai al Pashchiseyu. He says, don't you dare. Don't do it. Ki mi shalach yado b'mashiach Hashem v'nika. Who would dare touch the anointed of God? Who could touch the anointed of God and be found innocent? This is a guilt you can't get rid of. Vayomer David, and David says a second thing. Chai Hashem, by God's life. Ki im Hashem yigafenu. I see your hand, Ruth, but I'm going to go through this for a while first. Ki im Hashem yigafenu. God may strike him. Note the word yigafenu, which is from the same word that was used with Naval, vayigof Hashem. Same term. To strike him, God strikes him. O yomo yavo, or his day will come, vamezin, he'll die. O bamilchama yered v'nispa, or he'll go to war and he'll get killed that way, which in fact is what happened. Chalila li me Hashem, mishloach yadi b'mashiach Hashem. He says it would be a desecration for me from God if I were to send my hand against the anointed one of God. Ve'ata, and he says, and now, here's what we're going to do. Kach noes hachanis asher merash osav, take the spear that is by his head. Ve'asapachas hamayim, as well as the jug of water. V'nil chalanu, and we're going to go. You know what we're doing here in the military camp? We're taking trophies. That's what we're doing. That's all we came for. We got our trophies. We go. Vayikach David es hachanis ves tzapachas hamayim mirashosei Shaul. And David takes the spear and the jug of water from Shaul's head. Vayachulahem, and they went. Ve'ein ro'eh, no one sees. Ve'ein yodeya, nobody knows. Ve'ein mekitz, none of them wake up. Ki chulam yishenim, they are all sleeping. Ki tardemas Hashem nafla alayhem, the sleep of God has fallen upon them. So, we have a lot to talk about here. I see two hands, but I'm still going to go first. Sorry. So first of all, he swears by God that only God will take Shaul. He says Hashem's name twice. Chai Hashem ki im Hashem yigafenu. Medrash picks up on that and says it's actually a double oath. It doesn't sound that shot in the sentence. Nonetheless, take a look at source number 3. V'lama shnei pa'amim Hashem, why mention God twice? Ela amar lo, he said to him, Chei Hashem in tahargenu, al tahargeu. He says, by God, if you kill him, don't you dare kill him. Ve'im tahargeu, and if you kill him, Chei Hashem ani ahargecha, I'm going to come after you. Then I kill you. So it's a double warning to Abishai. So he says, Hashem will strike him, or his day will come, or he will die in war. So Radak says that what that means is, Abishai, calm down. Shaul's going to die soon. He's trying to placate him. He's trying to make him happy. But the big question you have to ask is David bluffing? How does David know that Shaul is going to die soon? Or is it really just a bluff? I'm not asking you this question. That's rhetorical. I'm going to answer it. The commentators go in different directions. Radak offers us two approaches, both of which also are brought in Abarbanel. Take a look at source number 4. Radak says, Vize Amar David Milibo. David said this on his own. It's his own logic. Ki Amar Bilibo, Kevan Shema'as Bo Hashem Yisparach Miyos Melech. He says, look, God rejected him as king. Right, that we know. Vitzivala Moshcheni, he commanded Shmuel to anoint me. Lo Yidachin Sheri Chazman. So he's not going to be king long. It's logical. God made me, and I'm going to be the new king. That's one approach. Second approach. Oh, Asher. Kimi Pishmuel Amar Sheyamus Bekarov. Second option. There's a nevuah from Shmuel. We just didn't know it before. Not now. Older. There had been a prophecy before Shmuel died that Shaul's going to die soon. This is not novel for Radak. The same thing happened in chapter 24 when David's men said, this is from God. God told you that you're going to be king and all that. So Radak there said in source number 5 that this was some prophecy that Hashem communicated via Shmuel, God, or Nasan the Navi, that his enemies will be given to him. Even though we never saw that stated regarding Shaul, but his men said it. That's an approach. So two ideas, logic or a nevuah we didn't know. But I wonder if you couldn't also give a third answer, which is David's overall emunah, of course Hashem is going to take care of me, combined with Hashem's track record. Look what happens to the people who oppose David. Right? In Perek Chaf Hei, Nabal died. Perek Yud Zayin, Goliath died. In Perek Yud Tes, Shaul was thwarted. In Perek Chaf Gimel, Shaul was thwarted by a Plishti invasion that came in to draw him away. So I wonder if it isn't just David's Emuna, especially when he uses the same word, Yigafenu, that was used to describe what Hashem did to Nabal. So maybe it's just David, not out of logic, but out of faith. Of course Hashem is going to do it. I would never do it. Hashem is going to be the one to take care of it. That's what I see going on. Okay, Susan, you were waiting, and then Ora.
I have two problems. One,
yeah.
He says, you do it, and then it tells us David does it.
I'm getting to that. I was gonna wait because I saw all the questions. I'm gonna come back to it.
And the other thing is, David's not afraid of Abishai here. You said to keep in mind,
yeah,
the fear. There's no fear here.
Not yet. No, the fear is coming. I think it has to do with all the dead people between here and there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I just, I said Aura and Susan, but the truth is Ruth had been waiting to ask a question before, so I'm gonna go over to Ruth first.
You sort of answered it, really.
Okay.
It's on how does David expect to end the war unless Shaul is dead?
Right, and the answer is Shaul will be dead, but not by my hand.
But not through his hand.
Exactly. Aura, you were going to say?
I just find it hard to swallow that he really seems like he has the purest of intentions, and he has such a moral compass of what is right. And how does that translate later to sending Uriah to battle? I mean, he's clearly...
Yeah, right. We're going to have to talk about that. I'm stalling for time, taking as long as I can in Shmuel Aleph.
Yeah, he's just exemplifying everything that is, straight and how could I do this?
And this is, somebody in a shiur I gave a shiur a couple of weeks ago, in which tangentially David came up. It was tangential. It's about apologizing and how David is a serial apologizer. And somebody threw in at the end of the shiur, the last minute of the shiur, we never see David apologizing directly to Bathsheba and to Uriah. And you have to know so much more about David in order to grasp what happens in that story. to read that story in a vacuum without all the things that you're pointing out that we see so consistently from him in Shmuel Aleph. And keep in mind, one cannot say, well, Shmuel Aleph is one book and Shmuel Beis is another book, because they're one book, right? We stressed that when we started this. So you're asking the right question, but we're going to have to monitor David and see what happens along the way, because you're right, it's a very different story. How did he get there from here? Yeah. Janine?
So according to this, the level of emunah that David had is greater than, let's say, Yaakov, who was not criticized for, you know, being proactive. Is he considered on a higher level of than Yaakov? I mean, Yaakov didn't just say Hashem is going to, he said, I'm going to inherit and he's going to take care of me. I don't have to worry about Esav. He did prepare to battle.
So it's not that David doesn't take steps. He does take steps. He's been hiding in the wilderness, you know. He's got his men who are, you know, with him prepared to attack if need be. But he's not willing to take this step. Question is, if Yaakov had Esav at his mercy, what would he have done? That's really the question. And I'm not comparing Esav and Shaul, except insofar as Shaul has made it very clear he plans to kill David. Yeah. So that's, I think, where the line is. But go back to Susan's question now. We said in sentence 11, right, I think it was 11, he said, David ordered Avishai, take the spear, take the water. But in sentence 12, David himself does it. So Abarbanel says, Avishai refuses the order. Avishai is like, I want to kill him. I don't want to take his water pitcher. What are you telling me to do? Radak, though, gives a different answer, which Abarbanel brings as well, which is that David doesn't trust Avishai. He's worried that if Avishai is standing there with a weapon right next to him, it's over. And honestly, think about all the times that Yoav will do exactly that. David will give an order and say, don't kill him. And then Yoav is going to have the opportunity, and that's exactly what he's going to do. So the lack of trust is justified here. And then they get out because of Tardemat Elohim, or Tardemat Hashem, or Tardemat Elohim. Tardemat Hashem. So Radak says that either means great sleep, that's one way to take it, or alternatively, it's what the Medrash in Tehillim says, I brought it in source number 7, saying here, you know, the Pasuk says they were Shochev and Yashen, they're lying there and they're sleeping. Those are the same thing. Ela shenitna lahem sheinat tardema. The answer is that a deep sleep was put upon them. Hashem is making sure, not unlike what we said, Avishai figured. He said, look, they're all sleeping. It's some kind of weird sleep. Hashem must have put this upon them. Yes, Ruth.
I don't really understand this rule, the way this war is going. Yeah. They seem to be following each other around. Encounters, but there doesn't seem to be any battles or any fighting or anything. So I don't know how.
So it's not a war. It's not a war. It's a chase. Meaning, it's a chase.
Okay, it's a chase, but they just seem to be basically going in circles.
Well, David is not.
How do they expect it to finish?
David is not pursuing Shaul. Shaul is pursuing David. David is trying to get away.
Every so often, David comes, like now, he comes upon Shaul's encampment.
Right. Correct. But only because Shaul came to him.
So what's he supposed to do with that encounter?
Well, that's what we're going to see.
Yeah.
But David is trying to stay away from Shaul. Shaul found out David is there, and he came in with 3,000 men, and David, instead of running away, which he has done before, comes up with this tactic. So we have to find out what does he have in mind. That's where we're going. But I want to come back again to comparing and contrasting this story with chapter 24. Similarity, David's men want to kill Shaul, and David refuses, while taking a trophy from Shaul, right? In 24, it was the corner of the cloak, and here it's the water in the jug. But Rav Amnon Bazak notes two differences, which feed into an idea that he is developing, which we've also suggested. We suggested back in chapter 25 that David actually improves between chapter 24 and chapter 26 because of his encounter with Abigail. So Rav Bazak supports that here. He says, look, Abishai offered to execute Shaul himself. Back in chapter 24, they said, David, go kill him. And David refused. Here, the temptation is stronger. Abishai said, I'm going to kill him. And David still refuses. So that's one interesting, contrast. It's the intensification of the temptation. That's what we're supposed to see here. That's number one. Number two, whereas in the previous chapter he cut Shaul's cloak, which is an irreversible act, here he took a jug, he can give back a jug. And in fact, we know he will. It's not as much of an attack as it was in chapter 24. We'll see more. We have more to see as the story goes on in terms of comparisons and contrasts.
So but can you take the spear as well?
Yes, but it's also reversible, as you'll see.
It's reversible, but that's much more significant.
No, Oh, more significant, you mean, than the corner of the cloak?
No, the corner of the cloak and the jug.
Well, the jug is with the spear. They're a set.
But the spear is an instrument of war.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. That is true. On the other hand, the tunic is a royal garment, like we discussed back in chapter 24 and we saw back in chapter 15.
Yeah, but I mean, Shaul tried to kill it with that spear.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe there's some nostalgia there. I don't know. So two side notes. I almost don't want to bring them because it distracts from the main thing, but I sort of feel like I have to just in covering this. In chapter 26, sentence 10, David's statement about how Shaul will die, right? He says, by God, God will strike him, or his day will come and die, or he will go to war and he will be killed. So the Gemara in Yevamos, some of you who learned Yeshaya with me may remember this Gemara, when Chizkiyahu has his life extended. Right? After he's told he's going to die, and then he has his life extended, and there's a whole discussion of he gets 15 years. Was that he was going to die 15 years early and now he will have his normal lifespan? Or is it he was going to die on the day he's supposed to die, and now he's going to get 15 extra years? There was a whole thing that we discussed back then. So the Gemara, if you take a look at source number 8, is invoked here by all the commentators because David speaks of Shaul having Yomo, his day of death. Like there is a day of death. So the Gemara says, Es mispar yamecha amale. This is one of the blessings that Hashem gives, that when you do what's right, I will fill your days, the number of your days. Tanaihi. The Gemara says this is the debate among the Tanaim, the sages from the Mishnah. Tisanya, Es mispar yamecha amale. Elu shnei doros. These are the years of generations. Zacha, if a person merits it, mashlim lo, then he gets all of his years. Lo zacha pochsin lo. If someone doesn't merit, they can lose. So in other words, Hashem decides maximum how long someone's life will be, and they can make it to that point or not make it to that point. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. That's Rabbi Akiva's perspective. V'chachamim omrim zacha mosifin lo. Lo zacha pochsin lo. V'chachamim say no. There's also extra time available. Hashem sets up a time, and then it could be less, it could be more, it depends on what you do. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva, they said to Rabbi Akiva, look, harehu omer vahosafti al yamecha chamesh esrei shana. With Chizkiyahu, right, Hashem said, I am going to add 15 years to your days. Doesn't that mean he was supposed to live to X, and now something is being added? Amar lem, Rabbi Akiva says, no, mishalo hosifu lo. Those were years he was supposed to live that were now being added back. He had lost it, and now they're added back. Teda, and you know it, Rabbi Akiva says, Sha'arei Navi Omeru Misnabei, Hine Bein Nolad LeDavid, LeBeis David, Yoshiyahu Shemal, V'adayin Lo Nolad Menashe. He says, I'll prove it to you. I can prove to you that this is true. Because the Navi, Yeshaya, says, a son will be born to the house of David. His name is Yoshiyahu. And yet, Menashe had not yet been born. Even Menashe, Chizkiyahu's son, has not yet been born. If Chizkiyahu dies now, Menashe will never be born, and therefore Yoshiyahu will never be born. So obviously, that Nevuah assumed that Chizkiyahu was going to live longer. So Rabbi Akiva says, you see, all he's doing is he's getting back the years he was supposed to have. The Rabbanan, to which the rabbis respond, who said Menashe was going to be Chizkiyahu's son? Or Yoshiyahu was going to be descended from Chizkiyahu? Miksiv mechizkiyahu, it doesn't say that Yoshiyahu was going to be born to Chizkiyahu. Lebeis David ksiv. He was going to be born to the house of David. If Chizkiyahu dies, he'll be born from somebody else. I'm not getting into the whole Yeshaya, Chizkiyahu, Menashe, Yoshiyahu thing right now. That's not my point. My point in bringing it is only because the commentators here, once David says his day will come, they all get very excited and they quote that Gemara about whether a person has a day that is in fact set for them such that they can't go any longer. That's number one. Number two, Ralbag. Take a look at source number 9. Ralbag points out that David is implying, and I don't think he's even implying, I think he's explying, right? He's saying this very clearly, that it's possible that Hashem sets a date for somebody's death, but because of circumstances they enter into, they die younger. That can happen. Yitachin bevo'o mivmakom ha'sakana, Hashem was below ito, Ralbag says. It's possible a person gets into a dangerous situation and they die, and it's not their time. Ukvar zachu zeh ba'alei chochmas mishpatei ha'kochavim b'sifreihem. And he says, you want to know who talks about this? The astrologers. He says astrologers talk a lot about this. Ralbag was not scared to mention astrology. In his day, astrology was science. There are forces, like we talk about gravity and radio waves and influences that you can't see that travel great distances. So, yeah, the heavenly spheres also exert influence. And he says, that is also the view of our perfect Torah, that in fact, a person might die before their time. That's why the Torah commands that if you have a roof that people can walk on, you have to make a fence around it. So that people who go there will avoid falling. So that shows that we are concerned that people might die before their time. So writes Ralbag here. So I just thought it was interesting because not everybody agrees with Ralbag regarding the ma'akeh, regarding the fence around the wall. When the Torah gives you the mitzvah of putting a fence around your roof, it says, "V'asisa ma'akeh legagecha," make a fence around your roof, right? And do you remember what it says next? Bingo. "V'lo tasim damim b'beitacha," do not place blood on your house, "ki yipol hanofel mimenu," when the faller falls from it. He's called a one who falls. Why? Source number 10, the Gemara in Shabbos, Kipol and Ophel Mimenu, Ra'ui Zeli Pol Misheshes Yimei Bereshis. This person was already destined to fall from the time of creation. It was part of the plan. Shahare Lo Nafal Va'akasiv Kra'o Nofel, because he hasn't fallen yet, and the text calls him the faller, one who falls. However, it's going to happen anyway. Merit is brought about via the meritorious, and guilt is brought about via those who are liable. So, according to this, the Gemara in Shabbos is saying that, no, if somebody falls, it's because they were supposed to fall. Which is not Ralbag. However, Ralbag has plenty of people on his side. I brought you the Sefer HaChinuch in source number 11. On this mitzvah of having a ma'akeh, in the interest of time, I'm just going to read out my translation. even though God watches the specifics of people's lives and knows their deeds and all that happens to them, good or bad, is at his decree and command, based on their merit and guilt. As the sages said, one does not bang his finger below unless it has been decreed upon him from above. Nonetheless, one must guard himself from commonplace events. For God created his world and built it upon the foundation of the pillars of nature. And he decreed that fire should burn and water should extinguish a flame. And so, too, nature may require that if a large stone should fall on a person's head, it would crush his skull. Or if a person would fall from the top of a high roof to the ground, he would die. And he was generous to the bodies of people, blowing into their nostrils the breath of life with intellect to guard the body from all harm. He gave you a brain. And in truth, some people who the king values, due to their great piety, may have miracles and so on. But he says, it's part of this world, despite the belief in great divine supervision, people might just fall prey to events. That happens. And I just brought you also the Netziv, because I really like his formulation. I heard it from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik many, many years ago. Source 12, commenting on the Sifri. He says, Hara'a she'asa la'atzmo oseh et shalah, ve'atov oseh et shalah. The evil a person commits generates its own evil. The good generates its own good. Kach alav ha'machshavaso yizbarach b'yitziras ha'olam. That is what God planned when he created the world. She'yishlot ha'adam ba'adam l'ralo, pasuk in Koheles, that one human being could affect another person, even to harm him. Or even a force to affect a person on earth, b'mazalo hara, because of his bad mazal. Bad things happen to people, and it's not what was supposed to be, but it is what happens. So, when David mentions Shaul has his day, his day will come, and then he says, yeah, but he could die sooner with war. Rabak says, see that? It's possible. It really can happen. Clear? A little bit of a tangent, but questions and comments on that? Too depressed? It's a little depressing. Okay. So let's go back into our story. Our story is not depressing at all. Pasuk Yud Gimel, sentence 13. Let's see what happens. Vayavor David ha'Eiver. David crossed some kind of a crossing to get back out of the camp. Vayamod al Rosh ha'Har Merachok. And he's still on top of a mountain far away, right? He's putting himself at a distance from Shaul, presumably for his own protection. Rav ha'makom b'neihem. There's a lot of room between them. Vayikra David el ha'om. And David calls to the army there. Veil Avner ben Ner, and to good old Avner. Remember, we've said this before, Avner is the one who is blamed for distancing Shaul from David. That's going to come through loud and clear here. He calls to Avner, Lemor, saying, Halo sa'ane Avner. Some of you are using translations. I want to hear, how do your editions translate the words Halo sa'ane Avner in sentence 14?
Will you not answer, Avner?
Will you not answer, Avner? I like that translation for reasons I'm going to explain, but I just want to hear the other translations first. Anybody have a different one? No? That's what they all have? Or no one wants to admit using a translation? That's really fine. Same one there. Okay. The pink book is popular. So, halosa ane Avner. The challenge in translating these words is the word hallo. Hallo is not a word that you use when you initiate a conversation. It indicates there has already been a conversation. Hey, won't you answer? Right? And that's why I liked what Susan's translation does. It picks up on that. It's not just answer me, Avner. It's won't you answer? There's an expectation here. You haven't been answering. That's what it sounds like, and we'll see that in Radak in a minute. Just to finish the sentence. Vayan Avner Vayomer, mi ata karasa el hamelech? Avner says, who are you calling to the king? No, Avner is not the king. He called Abner. He didn't call the king. So we're going to have to explain both of these points. So let's tackle them. First of all, halo sa'ane Avner, won't you answer Avner? So Radak takes it the way that the pink book does. Or I should say the pink book takes it the way Radak does. If you take a look at source number 13, achar shekara el ha'am ve'el Avner v'lo ha'yu onim oso. After he already called to the nation and to Avner, and they didn't answer, kara od el Avner b'shem, he called to Avner again by name. So in other words, the way to read the sentence is, and David called the nation, and he called Avner, and he did not get any response. And so he said again, hey, answer me now, Avner. That's Radak. However, the Yerushalmi reads it differently. The Yerushalmi, and we learned this Yerushalmi already, back in chapter 24, so this will sound familiar. The Yerushalmi says what he's saying is, what will you answer now? You're a big talker, Avner. You talked before. What are you going to say now? Take a look. Source number 14. Hebrew to the bottom of one side, English to the top of the next side. V'Rabbanan Amri, al yedei shlo hiniach Shaul hispayes mi David. The Rabbanan said Avner was liable for death. He ultimately died at the hands of Yoav. Why is it that he should die violently? Because he wouldn't allow Shaul to make up with David. Hadau dechsiv, back in chapter 24, David said, Ve'avi, my father, talking to Shaul, Re'ei gam re'ei es kenaf mi'elcha biyadi. See, the corner of your cloak in my hand? That shows I could have done things and I didn't do them. Amar le'ei, to which Avner responds, Mad boy mil gilgoy dehadein. He says, what do you want with this guy who's bluffing? Basira hu arta. You want to know what happened to the corner of your cloak? It got caught on a bush. It got caught on the thorn bush. And David just found it. The kevan shabo lamagal. So now, when David and Avishai come into the camp, Amar lo halo sa'ane Avner. He says, hey, won't you answer me, Avner? You got nothing to say now. Gabe kanav amarta besira hu art. When it came to the corner of the cloak, you said it was caught on a thorn bush. Chanit v'tzapachat besira hu art. What happened exactly with the spear? Right? What happened with the jug of water? Were they stuck on a thorn bush? Come on, Avner. He's trolling Avner. That's the Yerushalmi. One other approach in the Medrash Tehillim, and Radak quotes it as well, says the slightly different, but also calling back to chapter 24. The Halo Sa'ane Avner, they read it as, didn't you answer, Avner? Source number 15. Amar lo, he said to Avner, Mayesh lo, it's a typo I think in the Bar Ilan, it should be lecha, achshav la'anosi, what answer do you have for me now? Hare amartem emesh l'sha'ul al devar ha'me'ara, you know what you said before when this thing happened with the cave? She'amalaya salacha ma'uma, Hayinu nichnasin va'ochlen oso miyad. You told Shaul, if David would have done anything, we would have come and eaten him up right away. David never had a chance to harm you. Achshav harei achanis v'hatzapachas, mayesh lecha la'anos. What are you going to say now when I'm holding the spear in the water jug? I was in the camp and you did nothing. So don't talk about, you know, what you would have done to me, Avner. That's the way that the Medrash reads this. Now, Avner, for his part, is totally missing out on being trolled. He doesn't even know this is David talking. You lose the impact. When Avner says, who is it who's calling to the king? Unless you're going to tell me that he really does know, and he just doesn't want to say so. But what game is he playing then? What does that mean? Unclear to me as of this point. But Avner says, who dares call to the king? You're not calling to the king. He's calling to Avner. So I brought you in number 16 a list of different approaches to explain this, rather than have us go through all the text on it. Radak says that the way to translate the Hebrew is Mizeh Korei Al HaMelech. Who is it who is calling upon the king? Meaning the king is sleeping. Don't wake him up. That's the way Radak reads it. Malbim is fascinating. I really like Malbim here. He says, no, Avner assumes that whoever is calling is actually calling for the king, but doing so respectfully. In other words, it's rude to call to the king directly. So he said, hey, Avner, but he really is trying to reach the king. That's the way that, that's why Avner says what he says. He assumes that the person he's really calling for the king, and he says, who is this? That's the idea. In which case, we'll see David's response when David is going to say, no, actually, Avner, I'm calling for you because you failed to protect the king. But that we'll see. Professor Keel in the Dat Mikra says that the way to read it is, I am serving the king. How dare you interrupt me when I am in the king's service? It's another way to read it. I see Janine shaking her head yes, Debbie shaking her head no. The not sold. Okay. Three different...
The Miata is scornful. It's not asking the question, but it's, who are you?
Yeah, could be.
Could it also be, if we go back to the verse before, and we know that that David was already talking to Avner, because when you have, will you not answer me?
Yeah.
Maybe at that time, he also said something else about Shaul. Because we don't know. We know there was going to be this conversation.
Right. The problem is just... we're missing the words, so like you said, like we don't know, you know.
But it's, you know, I'm saying it's a possibility.
Yeah, it is a possibility. The biggest problem that I have in this section is just that Avner, I think, really doesn't know that this is David. I really think Avner doesn't know. I don't think he's playing games. And the reason I say it, jump ahead for a second to Pasuk Yud Zayin. It's going to say Vayaker Shaul is called David. Shaul recognizes David's voice. So it really sounds like Avner doesn't. Which takes the wind out of the sails of that whole medrash. Although that happens, you know, you think you got in a good line and the other person just completely went over their head. Like, that really could be. So let's see what happens. David is not done with Avner. Pasuk Tezvav. Vayomer David el Avner. David says to Avner, hello, Ishata. You're a great warrior. Umi kamocha bi Yisrael, who is like you in all Israel? V'lama lo shamarta el adonecha hamelech, why didn't you protect your master the king? Kiva achad ha'am lahashchises hamelech adonecha. Some guy from the nation just came here and could have killed the king. What did you do here? You didn't do your job. And he continues. He's not done, Susan. Lo tov hadavar hazeh asher asisa. What you did is not good, Avner. You should be fired. Chai Hashem, by God, kivne maves atem. You, plural, the army, should be liable for death. Ashelo shemartem al adonechem al Mashiach Hashem. You didn't guard your master, the anointed one of God. Ve'ata re'ei echanis hamelech, ve'estapachas hamayim ashemara ashosav. Why don't you go look for the spear and the jug of water that were by his head? Let me know when you find them. The David is all over Avner. Yes, Susan.
Did David know about that Hashem put them to sleep in a deep sleep? Because it sort of means this doesn't hold water in the sense that if David really knew that they had no control over their sleep, I mean, is he taking advantage of it?
Totally, totally and completely taking advantage. Absolutely, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. David knows because Avishai knew and they saw it. That's what I think. I think he's having fun. Having fun as much as you can when the king is coming after you with 3,000 warriors to kill you, you know? But you can't read this and not hear the sarcasm. You know? If David wanted to play it straight, these wouldn't be his words. So, Vayaker Shaul is called David. Shaul hears David's voice, and he recognizes it right away. Vayomer, and he says, HaKol Chazeh B'ni David. Notice, right? Is that the voice of my son, David? Which, by the way, he called him also back in chapter 24. He called him my son as well. Vayomer David, Koli Adoni HaMelech. And David says, yes, that is my voice, my master the king. David is very clear. He is, as Ora said before, Yashar. Very straight. Shaul is the Mashiach Hashem. He's my king. He's my master. Vayomer. And then he beseeches Shaul. Lama ze Adoni rodef acharei avda? Why is my master pursuing his servant? Ki me'al sisi umabi adi ra'ah. What have I done wrong? What evil did I do? Sounds almost like Abigail from the previous parak, with all the Adonis and Avdachas. Ve'ata yishma na Adoni amelech eis divrei avdo. Let my master, the king, hear the words of his servant. Im Hashem hisis chavi yorach mincha. If God set you against me, if God sicked you on me, let God smell my offering. I'll bring God a sacrifice and God will accept me back. If this is the product of God's rage, I can deal with it. Ve'im b'nei ha'adam, and if it's because of human beings, Avner, arurim heim lifnei Hashem, they are cursed before God. Ki gershuni hayoma mehistapeach b'nachalas Hashem, they chased me out of joining the portion of God today, le'mor lech avod Elohim acherim, saying, go worship the gods of others. You better believe we're going to come back to that line. Just to finish though, to finish the sentence. Ve'ata, and now, al yipol dami artsa mineged p'nei Hashem. Don't let my blood fall to the ground from before the face of God. Ki yatsa melech Yisrael levakesh es parosh echad. King of Israel is pursuing this one louse, a term he also used back in chapter 24. Kasher yirdof hakore beharim. I'm not going to translate that. We're going to have to come back to that because that admits of multiple translations, that last phrase. David beseeches Shaul. Yes, it's me, my master, my king. You're pursuing me. I've done nothing wrong. I can make it good. I can make it up. I can deal with it with God. I want to get rid of the people who are setting you against me. This doesn't have to be what happens, he says to Shaul. So I see it's 2:30. So what we're going to have to do is hold questions and comments on this. Write them down for next time. And God willing, next time we will we'll get to go through possibly the rest of the chapter. We'll see. I would love it if we could do that, because next week is the last class before the summer break. So it would be good if we could finish chapter 26 then. All the people who are listening to the recordings online are like, what does it matter? The next recording is the next recording anyway. But who wants to be stuck like that for 4 weeks? All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Be well. Have a good Shabbos.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbos.